Thank you, Patrick. Good afternoon and good morning to the U.S. Welcome to our Q1 conference call. With us today is Stephan Sturm. Stephan will give you an update on Q1 and cover the financials, followed by a Q&A session. After the call, a replay and the transcript will be available on our website. Before I hand over to Stephan, please pay attention to our usual disclaimer, which is on page two in the presentation. With that, it's my pleasure to hand over to Stephan for his opening remarks.
Thank you, Markus. Good afternoon and good morning. Warm welcome. As always, we appreciate your interest in Fresenius. Markus has pointed out the safe harbor language to you, so let's move right to slide three. Negotiating and announcing the acquisition of Akorn and our investment into the biosimilars business, those were definitely our Q1 highlights. These transactions prepare Fresenius Kabi for the next decade, not only, but in particular in the U.S. Akorn will enhance and complement our current injectables business and will diversify our product portfolio into adjacent growth areas. The investment into the biosimilars business builds on many of our existing strengths and offers great opportunities, while the chosen transaction structure nicely contains the risks. The transactions will allow us to leverage already strong institutional market access that we have in the U.S., maybe even more. While Akorn will provide us superior access to physicians and the retail market, that's valuable in the short term, but even more so once we get to launch our first biosimilars. The internationalization of our hospital business was another Q1 highlight. We successfully closed the Quirónsalud acquisition end of January, and our new colleagues already made a meaningful positive contribution to group earnings. I'm convinced there's more to come. Integration is running smoothly with intense and broad activity related to best practice exchange for mutual benefit. Now, with regard to Fresenius' financial performance, we had a strong start into the year. We were, yet again, very satisfied with the consistency of organic growth across our four business segments, and extremely pleased with earnings growth, 26% above the not exactly weak first quarter of 2016. That's just fantastic. Given these strong results and bright prospects ahead, we raise our group earnings guidance to 19%-21% on a like-for-like basis. Like-for-like means comparable with the parameter we based our original guidance on in February. That is before effects of the acquisitions we announced for Fresenius Kabi last week. Even including the roughly 50 million euros of expenses to further develop our biosimilars platform in the second half of this year, we project earnings growth within the original range of 17%-20%. With that, let's move to page four and our key financials. The growth rates shown on this slide are on a constant currency basis, so directly comparable to our group guidance for sales and net income. We have delivered 17% sales growth in the first quarter at the upper end of our guidance range. Fresenius Medical Care's agreement with the U.S. Veterans Administration, I call it the VA, is included and stands for about 2 points of growth. On the other hand, Quirónsalud has contributed for only 2 out of the 3 months. And that stands for ballpark 3 missing growth points. EBIT, their growth reached a mighty 25%. And net income grew even 26%. And yes, that includes 5 points from the agreement with the VA, but again, relative to the coming quarters, we're missing 1 monthly contribution from Quirón Salud. I'd say that bodes well for the rest of the year. Let's take a look at the group P&L on slide 5, where the growth rates are again on a constant currency basis. Net interest was €157 million in the quarter, up €8 million from Q4 last year. Key driver of the increase was obviously the Quirón Salud acquisition financing. But in that respect, please bear in mind that this Q1 expense is not a fully loaded run rate yet. And for the full year, therefore, we prefer to confirm our February guidance of €670 to €690 million. Q1 tax rate in the group was 29.1%. The year-over-year increase, that's mainly driven by FMC's agreement with the VA, which is taxed at US rates. Therefore, it's temporary in our minds, isolated to Q1, and for the full year, we continue to expect a 28 to 29% tax rate. Now that leads us to the 26% earnings growth in the first quarter that I already mentioned. That rate is likely to decrease going forward, but frankly, I've always preferred Q1 to be ahead of guidance rather than having to play catch-up. Slide 6 illustrates the momentum at our 4 business segments. Sales growth rates on the left are organic for ease of comparison to our individual guidance ranges, and EBIT growth on the right is at constant currency. Let's start with Kabi, a strong 7% organic sales growth with contributions from around the world. EBIT growth at 2%, so behind sales growth, but slightly ahead of our expectations. Given the tough comp from the first quarter of last year, we actually believe positive EBIT growth is quite an accomplishment. We're also very happy with Helios's Q1, 60% EBIT growth. Now, that's obviously driven by the first-time consolidation of Quirón Salud, albeit for only 2 months. But even excluding our Spanish acquisition, we saw a remarkable 14% growth. And while Vamed's growth rates may look disappointing, this is down to the typical quarterly fluctuations in its more lumpy project business, combined with small numbers in any Q1. In absolute terms, the EBIT shortfall is just €1 million. Before taking a more detailed look at Kabi, Helios, and Vamed, a brief word on Fresenius Medical Care. Also, FMC showed strong sales and earnings growth in Q1 and is well on track to meet its full-year guidance. I'd like to congratulate Bill Valley, who's now at the helm of FMC's North American business, to a very successful start. And I'm particularly pleased to see that the value-based care programs in that region, well, they continue to flourish. And for the avoidance of doubt, we at Fresenius firmly support FMC's acquisition of Cura in Australia. Cura is about day clinics rather than acute hospitals. And that is FMC's home turf. More details later this afternoon from Rhys and Mike. Let's turn to page 7 for a review of Fresenius Kabi's organic sales growth by region. In a nutshell, relative to earlier expectations, North America in line, Europe a notch stronger, and emerging markets well above. North America, 4% organic growth is in line with our mid-single digit guidance. And do bear in mind that last year, the first quarter was the strongest quarter of the year, with a massive 20% year-over-year organic growth, boosted by launches of key products like Neostigmine, which has come under competitive pressure since. So against that backdrop, we're happy with the 4% growth. A brief update on the shortage situation. With 15 Kabi IV drugs designated in shortage end of the first quarter, shortages continue to ease slowly but surely. Such gradual easing is reflected in our full year assumptions. It may accelerate though. But even at the risk of being repetitive, there is quite a life beyond formal shortages. And as you can see, Kabi's market position, built on reliable supply and excellent quality, remains very strong. Reapprovals. We have received one new product approval so far this year. That's okay. We had said in February this year's launch schedule was likely to be backloaded. So we confirm our expectation to end 2017 with more than 10 new drug launches, but we'll have some uncertainty until late. So with 4% year to date, the shortage and approval situation as described, slightly easing comps on the one hand, but quite some uncertainty around competitive dynamics for some of our key molecules on the other, we feel comfortable to confirm our mid-single-digit organic sales growth guidance for the full year. But we generally remain cautious. In Europe, we've seen solid organic growth of 7%, driven by our enteral nutrition franchise and an improving product partnering business. We may not be able to maintain that pace, but feel comfortable now to aim for the upper half of that original low to mid single digit range we had guided you to in February. Over to slide 8 and the emerging markets, where we're seeing continued strong financial performance in Asia. China alone has delivered organic growth of 10% in the first quarter. There, progress on the introduction of the new tender rules remains slow. Only 13 out of a total of 31 provinces have concluded a tender process so far. So we now expect implementation across all of China to be complete only by year end, leading to low to mid-single-digit price reductions as a full year 2017 impact. At the same time, we continue to experience double-digit volume growth, which then consequentially translates into sustainable sales growth in this very key market. Asia-Pacific ex-China was a notch higher at 11% organic growth in Q1. Structurally growing demand coupled with successfully concluded restructuring initiatives that led to this excellent performance. Latin America and Africa, yet again outstanding with 14% organic sales growth. Price increases are to some degree inflation driven though. So our expectations for the emerging markets as a whole have slightly improved. We now project organic sales growth to be at least 10%. Let's turn to slide 9 and Kabi's EBIT. Total EBIT at the bottom of the page, that came in at €313 million, an increase of 2% at constant currency. As I said, there was a risk of negative growth given a tough comp, and I'm glad we managed to avoid that. Let's take a closer look at the region. From top to bottom, 3% in Europe, an inline quarter. We expect EBIT growth to accelerate in the coming quarters, driven by an improving Enteral Nutrition franchise and our product partnering business. Hence, we feel comfortable to confirm our mid to high single-digit growth expectation for the full year. Minus 2% growth in North America. That means very close to an outsized first quarter of last year, which was also EBIT-wise the strongest quarter of 2016. With a massive 30% currency-adjusted growth at the time. You know that Neostigmine has seen stronger competition since. And daptomycin creates some relief, but we have told you that for this molecule, we're in a partnership. So recognizing all of the revenue while sharing the profit is a key reason why sales growth is ahead of EBIT growth. Looking ahead, we believe growth will accelerate. Comps will get a bit easier. Product launches will kick in over time. And so we feel comfortable to confirm our low to mid-single-digit EBIT growth expectation for North America. The emerging markets have shown a stellar 26% growth, admittedly over a relatively modest comp. Excellent contributions, not only from the Asian markets, but also from Latin America. And so given the strong start to the year, we turn a bit more optimistic and believe we may even see double-digit EBIT growth in the full year. With €89 million, corporate and R&D costs are up 14% year over year, driven by a bit unfavorable phasing and also some non-recurring expenses. Going forward, also due to the two acquisitions announced last week, we will see a changed phasing of R&D projects or a replacement of current R&D platforms. Hence, for corporate and R&D costs, we now expect a broadly flat development year over year, rather than a slight increase. So in a summary, a broad-based positive development that leads us to increase our guidance. With that, let's turn to Fresenius Helios on slide 10, where we've seen strong organic sales growth of 5% at Helios Kliniken in Germany. Solid, broad-based admissions growth across the entire hospital network. And a bit of a tailwind as Easter was a Q1 event last year. That'll turn into a bit of a headwind in the second quarter, and so I'd be surprised if we managed to keep the Q1 pace. Some operating news. In March, we opened Helios's new hospital building in the city of Duisburg for up to 350 inpatients. Construction took 2 years, and Helios invested €50 million. This is just one example for how we continuously invest in our facilities to further improve the medical quality for our patients. And at the same time, we drive efficiency and manage to increase our margins. Everybody wins in projects like this one. Over to Quirónsalud Salute, which is consolidated since February 1st. We are very pleased with the performance in the first 2 months, with good sales and excellent EBIT numbers. Financial integration was hard work, but it ran very smoothly. No surprises. And Kiron Salute is fully on track with first integration projects. We call it integration through interaction. And we experience a highly professional and well-organized company at Kiron Salute, eager to learn and to share knowledge for mutual benefit. And jointly, we have already made the first meaningful investment decision. Kiron Salute will build a proton beam therapy center in Madrid for an estimated amount of 14 million euros. Scheduled for opening in 2019, it will be the first facility of this type in all of Spain. So our investment will take cancer therapy in the country to the next level, and we will make a return on it. Win-win. On to slide 11, where you can see that total EBIT came in at 255 million euros, up 60% year over year. Also margin-wise, an improvement to 12.6%. A strong EBIT growth of 14% for Helios Kliniken in Germany. That's a reflection of the strong top-line growth and a modest comp, given Easter was a Q1 event last year. Kiron Salute made a nice 74 million euro contribution, so about a quarter of our full year guidance, but in just 2 months. Do us a favor, please. Don't get carried away. Don't extrapolate. A, the Easter effect also applies to Spain. And B, expect some seasonality with a quite pronounced summer slump. Take it as a strong start, but we'll maintain our guidance. Over to Fresenius Vamed on slide 12, where organic sales growth was a modest 2% in the first quarter, service business nicely up, the more volatile and lumpy project business down, but all within the normal range of quarterly fluctuations. EBIT was a million euros short of last year, nothing to worry about. And yet again, we're looking at a very solid order intake, and that has taken Vamed's order book to a new all-time high, above 2 billion euros for the first time. So we have reason to be optimistic for the remainder of the year. On to slide 13, where we're looking at a strong cash flow quarter. Kabi posted a Q1 cash flow of 192 million euros, top left. A 12% margin is excellent for a first quarter, and that therefore increased the last 12-month margin by almost a point to 17.4%, a great start of the year. Likewise at Helios, cash flow of 184 million euros represents a margin of 9.1% and also took the LTM margin up by almost a point to 11.5%. So for the group, at the bottom of the slide, this solid performance took the LTM margin to a strong 12.1%. Deduct group CapEx of 5.2%, middle column, and you'll arrive at a free cash flow margin, bottom right, of 6.9%. That's the upper end of our historical track record. And that free cash flow meaningfully mitigated leverage post-closing of Kiron Salute. We finished the first quarter at 2.98 times net debt to EBITDA. So despite the largest acquisition in Fresenius' history, we managed to stay within our self-imposed target corridor of 2.5 to 3 times. That won't be possible pro forma the acquisition of Acorn and our investment into biosimilars. We expect leverage at year-end of about 3.3 times, but fairly rapid delevering thereafter. I'm confident we can again rely on our delevering track record, driven by continuous free cash flow generation while growing EBITDA. And all three rating agencies share that view. You will have seen that they have confirmed our current investment grade rating last week. Let's turn to slide 14 for the full year outlook by business segment and Kabi's organic growth first. On the back of a solid first quarter, we prefer to stick to our guidance range of 5 to 7%. That's a blend of the regional contributions I mentioned, low to mid-single digits for Europe, skewed towards the upper half of that range, at least 10% growth for the emerging markets, and mid-single digits growth with some uncertainty for North America. On to EBIT, where we raise our guidance by 1 point to a 6 to 8% range. I gave you the reasons for the expected low to mid-single digit EBIT growth in North America and the mid to high single digit growth in Europe. Blend that with our improved outlook for the emerging markets of now likely double-digit growth, and our revised expectation of broadly flat corporate and R&D costs, and you'll get to that incremental 1 percentage point. For Helios, in terms of organic sales growth, on the back of 5% in Q1, albeit helped by Easter, we feel good to confirm our 3 to 5% guidance range. Reported sales, we seem slightly ahead there, but watch the reverse Easter effect in Q and a softer summer quarter in Spain. So whilst we feel very comfortable, at this point we prefer to confirm our guidance of roughly 8.6 billion euros. And the same applies to EBIT, where we firmly stand behind our guidance range of 1.02 billion to 1.07 billion euros for the full year. For Vamed, I already mentioned the huge and well-diversified order book, and that is a factor that gives us quite some confidence. And therefore, we confirm the guidance ranges of 5 to 10% each for sales and EBIT growth. Taken all together for the group, that's now on slide 15, we confirm our guidance of 15 to 17% currency adjusted sales growth. And as to the currency translation effect, if current exchange rates prevailed until the end of the year, we'd see a tailwind of 1 to 2 percentage points, mainly from dollar strength. For net income, primarily the incremental contribution that we expect from Kabi allows us to raise our full year guidance to 19 to 21% currency adjusted growth. Also here, as of today, we expect a 1 to 2 point currency tailwind. For good order, I mentioned it, this guidance range is like for like, so based on our February parameter. Specifically, it is before transaction costs, which are mainly related to financing the acquisition of Akorn, and before approximately 50 million euros costs for the further development of Merck's biosimilars business, which we expect to incur between closing and year-end. However, even including those recurring development costs, we project earnings growth within the previous 17 to 20% range. So as you can see, very healthy growth and bright prospects at all our businesses. We're raising our guidance with confidence. And from that position of strength, we're protecting and building our business for the next decade. not because we need to, because we can. With that, I'm happy to take your questions. Thank you for now.
And our first question today comes from the line of Lisa Clive of Bernstein. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, thanks for taking the questions. On your biosimilars acquisition, I'm just thinking on the milestone payments. Are any of them around sort of broader regulatory issues, or are they all specifically around the progress of the pipeline? And specifically, I'm thinking about the upcoming U.S. Supreme Court decision around the timing of the notification process, as well as the so-called patent dance. And if you could just provide your views on that situation, particularly, you know, how meaningful the patent dance issue could be if it doesn't go in the biosimilars' favor.
Thank you, Lisa. On your first question, frankly, we have agreed with Merck to be rather uptight on this, but the milestone payments in general, they are much more molecule specific. Number two, on the Supreme Court's decision, patent dance, yes, that is something that we have factored into our models. Obviously, a delay and a stronger protection position by the incumbents is going to weigh on our pipeline. However, I believe we have generally taken a conservative stance here and may easily also see some upside. In general, and I said that after the announcement to most or all of the investors that I've seen on the road, you've got to share our belief that going forward, there has got to be a common interest in making these very effective, proven, safe drugs available to larger parts of the population. And against the backdrop of increasingly constrained healthcare budgets, we just believe that given due time, that is going to happen. As far as patent dance decision is concerned, that would affect all of the competitors in the biosimilar space and may even help us in those compounds where we may be a bit behind.
Okay, thanks. And then could you give us an update on your nutrition business in North America? It obviously takes quite some time to try and build out a sales force to sell a completely differentiated product like the three-chamber bag, but just an update on that and sort of what we should think about in terms of revenue contribution for that product. And then likewise, the same for infusion therapy. You know, Becton Dickinson clearly has their hands full with their own M&A. Is there just how should we think about that 10-year supply agreement and where it is, how it's looking for this year?
Okay. Lisa, on your third question, parenteral nutrition, for the avoidance of doubt, it's our three-chamber bag where we have an approval, where we've launched the product. But as we said before, for the time being, you should not be overly enthusiastic about the sales and earnings contribution. This is a, as you rightly said, differentiated product. It is in contrast to the common and long-standing medical practice in the U.S. So this is about convincing key opinion leaders first that this is a, well, almost revolutionary, at least game-changing practice, which is, on the other hand, doing a lot of good for the patient while being very effective also on a hospital's working capital. So what we need to do going forward is to do more marketing vis-a-vis these convincing these key opinion leaders, convince those KOLs to spread the good news, but at the same time also tailor our product more to the specific needs of the U.S. market. In a nutshell, you've heard that from my elaborated speech now, this is going to be a little while, but take some comfort from the fact that, we have a meaningful growth guidance for this year, and there's hardly anything for parenteral nutrition in it. And B, in the most complicated slide ever that I presented last week on our future product portfolio, there was very explicitly a spot for parenteral nutrition. So rest assured, by the time when we launch our biosimilars, we will also have a very solid parenteral nutrition offering. On the infusion solution, business steady as she goes. As we said before, it does not make a whole lot of sense to ship loads of sterilized mineral water over the Atlantic to sell it in the U.S. And therefore, what we need to come to terms with is a manufacturing site in the U.S. And that can either be acquired, it can be a brownfield, or it can be a greenfield operation. As you will appreciate, we had our hands full recently with other investment decisions, but rest assured, that is something that we're going to turn to in short order, and also the infusion solution was depicted on the mother of all slides last Tuesday, and I very much expect that to be an integral part of our product offering by 2020.
Great. Thanks very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Tom Jones of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. The first one, Stefan, I just wondered if you might help us reconcile the difference between your EBIT growth guidance and the group net income growth guidance. If I take the Kabi guidance, it implies you expect roughly 10, 11, 12 million euros of additional EBIT. But the net income guidance, 1-2% increase, implies somewhere between 50 and 30 million in net income. So I was wondering if you just help us reconcile those two numbers. Is it just that you're more optimistic that the other businesses will come in at the top end of the previous EBIT guidance, or is there something else that I'm missing there? And then the second question.
Thank you, Tom. We'll come on to your other two questions, but I'm just eager to say you just won me a bet against Marcus. I bet that somebody would ask that question. I even bet that it would be you. So, yes, the increased EBIT growth guidance at Kabi stands for a bit less than a percentage point of growth. What the missing parts are, they are coming from across the entire range of our businesses where we, as you may appreciate, in particular with one major acquisition coming on stream, were a bit more cautious earlier this year when we provided guidance. And in the meantime, with the year passing on, with us getting more comfort, I think it was appropriate to remove some of that uncertainty discount at the bottom end of those ranges. It was not sufficiently pronounced to lead to a formal revision of the respective ranges, but within those ranges, arguably, we have at least gradually moved up, and therefore, as you've seen, we've chosen to raise the bottom end of the group earnings guidance by 2 points and the upper end by one.
Okay, perfect. That makes perfect sense. And let me try one that maybe you weren't expecting. I was just wondering, specifically with regards to Kabi, if the Trump administration is successful, and I guess that's a big if, in attempting to clear the backlog and accelerate the pace of ANDA approvals at the FDA, how would you see that falling out for Kabi? I guess on one hand, it will help you get your products to market quicker, but then on the other hand, it will help everybody else get their products quicker to market. Just wondering what your thoughts might be on that particular dynamic.
Tom, we discussed this before. The rising tide raises all the ships, and therefore it's a double-edged sword. And whenever my colleagues complain about the slow pace of FDA, my standard answer is, look, it helps us with our existing products. My general comment, and frankly, I know as little about our competitors' pipelines as you, I would say it is substantially better to look at a pipeline that is record full. It is substantially better to look at a pipeline at Acorn, which is going to add 85 products to us, than looking at the prospect of say, lightened procedures at the FDA were empty-handed.
Sure.
And therefore, qualitatively, generally, I remain very optimistic.
Okay.
But as you said yourself, it is a bit of an if. We haven't seen that much in terms of progress recently. Our observation is that the FDA has more focused on solid dosage forms rather than on liquids.
Perfect. And then perhaps one quick question on Quirón Salud. Now that you've owned that business for 3 months or so now, and perhaps had a chance to learn a little bit more about it, I'm just wondering what your feelings towards the PPP structures that Quirón Salud has. And you know, initially, when you did this acquisition, you cited those as one particular reason why the purchase multiple was a little bit lower than in comparable transactions. But now, you know, you've had a bit of a chance to learn about those. Has your appetite increased around perhaps doing more PPPs, or do you see that perhaps as an area of a risk for Quirón Salud?
We're now looking at 3 months of ownership, you're right, and I continue to be intrigued. What I said at the time, in last September, must have been that I was looking for a multiple discount because it was the first step into uncharted territory and that I needed a bit of a risk discount for moving abroad. Rather the opposite, Tom, is true for the PPPs. That was a key reason why I was increasingly intrigued by going about the Quirón Salud acquisition. I just think that this is a very, very smart solution to provide high-quality healthcare to a population while at the same time having mitigants when it comes to containing the overall cost for the payers. And therefore, we'd welcome more PPP opportunities, absolutely. This is much rather a question of supply than our demand.
Perfect. That's all very clear. I'll jump back in the queue. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Jüngling of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three. Firstly, on Quirón Salud, can you please disclose the EBITDA for Q1 of 2017 and also separately the depreciation and separately the amortization? Question number two is also on Quirón. Can you comment on the revenue and the earnings seasonality by quarter? Because if I look at Helios, it's fairly evenly distributed throughout the year. It seems to be quite different here with Quirón, so some color on this would be useful between the quarters. And question number three is on Helios. The occupancy rate is now at 80%. What is the natural peak before organic growth becomes more challenging with what you've got today? Thank you.
Michael, thank you. I had to look up those numbers, but I will gladly provide them. Quirón Salud for the 2 months of February and March was EBITDA of 104, depreciation of 16, and amortization of 14, and that should get you to the EBIT that we were showing of 74. Seasonality, you may recall that in the old days we were pointing for Helios in Germany to a roughly 45-55 split between the first and the second half. But that was rather driven by the timing of budget agreements than by patient admissions. In Spain, we are looking at a weak third quarter. And in the summer months, we're also in our hospitals. Not all hospital rooms are air-conditioned. And when in particular elective surgery, when it is not a must, is rather delayed into the cooler months, we will be looking at a modest capacity utilization, number of patients, and also sales and EBIT. But over the rest of the year, that so quarters 1, 2, and 4, that should not be anything out of the ordinary. As far as Helios is concerned and the capacity utilization, look, that capacity utilization is fairly stable over the last years. It moves up and down by a point or two from time to time, but nothing dramatic. And what that should tell you is that we're doing a reasonable job in managing the additional cases that we get in that, everything else being equal, should lead to an increased capacity utilization by reducing the average length of stay. And that then structurally has led and is expected to lead to a fairly flat capacity utilization. Finally, you will recall from our September announcement of Quirón Salud that the substantially shorter average length of stay in Spain is something that we were particularly intrigued by. One of the integration projects that I was referring to is just focusing on that area. And I would, well, expect at this point in time is said too much, but I would hope that over time there is something that we can learn from our colleagues that will bring down the average length of stay even more, and that should lead to some more relief on the capacity utilization.
Thank you, Stefan. Just to follow up on the seasonality of Quirón, can you give some guidance then for the third quarter? Is it normally 20% of revenues for the year, or is it even lower than that?
Michael, sorry, bear with us.
Okay, thank you.
Patrick, do we have the next question, please?
Yes, and the next question comes from the line of Chris Cooper of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. I've just got two left, actually, both on Kabi. Firstly, just on your European business, organic growth of 7% is far stronger than we've seen in recent times, yet the margins actually declined 30 bips. I understand a good chunk of the top line was contract manufacturing. Can you just confirm that is margin dilutive? And are there any other factors you'd call out there?
Generally, yes, Chris. That is a determining factor here.
And can you give us a sense then about how big the contract business is for you today and how you expect that to trend going forward?
It is not overly large. It does play a role, as you can see from the from the margin effect here. Over time, I would expect it to play a decreasing role, given that the historical growth rate is also substantially below what we experience in our core businesses. It is a very nice additive to make use of spare capacity, in particular in our European manufacturing plants. But frankly, if we have capacities to fill with our own products, we'd rather do that. And that is what we intend to do going forward.
Got it. Okay. And secondly, can you just please provide a quick update on the manufacturing sites that you voluntarily shut down in the U.S.? Are you back up to 100% yet? And just generally an update on progress there would be helpful. Thank you.
Look, to remind everyone, what we did in the fourth quarter of last year was that we voluntarily shut down our two large manufacturing sites. That is against the backdrop of major CapEx plans where we wanted to upgrade these facilities, but also want to, quality-wise, but where we also want to expand their capacities. This would have been necessary anyway, and so against the backdrop of a very strong 2016, we chose to accelerate those measures. the plant shutdown itself, the planned initiatives that all went very nicely according to plan. Also, the FDA is happy with what we've done in that respect, and therefore that bodes well for the completion of this expansion and upgrade project. We would very much expect that this helps to strengthen our manufacturing position, our market position in the U.S. Overall. I want to remind you that a long time ago, I think it dates back to 2013, we took the decision that as a rule, and certainly there are always going to be a few exceptions, but as a general rule, we'd like to manufacture in the U.S. for the U.S. And that is what these expansion and upgrade plans are about.
And so, sorry if I missed it, but could you just confirm when you expect the programs to be complete and when you're back up to fully operational at those two sites?
That is not going to be before the end of next year.
Got it. Thank you.
Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Veronika Dubajova, Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. I think most of them have been answered. I just have a couple of them. Stefan, can you give us an update, or can you give us the figure for what the organic growth rate within Kirin Salud was for the 2 months that you consolidated it? That would be quite helpful, and sort of whether your expectations for the full year are still around the 6% mark, that would be great. And then my second question was just on CapEx guidance for the 4 years. That seems to be – that was quite low in Q1. Thank you.
Veronica, I don't have that number for you. I'm sorry. Expect at least a blended organic growth rate from next year onwards.
Okay.
I want to wholeheartedly confirm that Kirin Salud has tracked very nicely relative to our expectations. As to CapEx, Veronica, don't read too much into that Q1. If you look at historical patterns, there's always a bit of a year-end frenzy. Q4 is always the largest, Q1 the weakest, and for the year as a whole, I would continue to expect CapEx for the group as a whole somewhere in the 5 to 6% range of sales.
That's great. That was all for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Ian Douglas-Pennant of UBS. Please go ahead.
Ian?
Ian, your microphone is open to ask your question. You may now ask your question, sir. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by one at any time. And we will continue, and our next question comes from the line of Hans Boström of Credit Suisse.
Hello. Just one question on your exciting investment in proton beam therapy in Madrid. Do you have any contract with payers already, or is this sort of a green venture? Do you expect to have quite a lot of healthcare tourists coming into this to get treatment, or how are you thinking about the development of that?
Extensive market research, and as I said, a proven technology in the meantime, well penetrated in markets like Germany by now. We have historically shied away from it, but against the backdrop of these two patterns, we felt increasingly comfortable about it. So after a very quick investigation, decided to go for it when our friends at Kirin Salud proposed it to us. As I said in my prepared remarks, first and so far only known project like this in Spain. I believe there is something in Portugal, but we would expect a bit of medical tourism from within Spain. For those who are a bit more familiar with that therapy, it is it lends itself in particular to pediatric applications because of the lower side effects. And therefore, as I said earlier, we feel good about it, both from a medical perspective as well as from a return on investment perspective.
And the follow-up on healthcare tourism in general, I understand that market is about half a billion euros in Spain. How big part of your revenue base in Spain is from tourists coming from abroad?
Hans, so far not measurable. It is on our list. If you go back to our September announcement, the German permanent residents in Spain, as well as many of the tourists, are a specific target group. It is one work stream in our overall integration project that we're focused on. You will recall that we hadn't put anything in terms of revenue synergies into our model, into our assumptions that we shared with you, so that would be cream on top. Give us a bit of time to work on that, but I'm certain we're going to give you also a quantitative update over the course of next year.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
Okay, there are no further questions.
Well, thanks for joining us today. We will be back in summer with our Q2 figures. In between, we're participating in several conferences, and if you're interested to meet us in one of these, shoot us an email, and we try to make it happen.
Thank you all.